This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. My name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And welcome to part two of the International Convention Preview.
And joining us on the show now from Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, is Patty Kennedy. Patty is a speech and voice coach and an expert on business communication and etiquette, and she's going to be presenting a session entitled Accent Reduction for Professionals. Patty Kennedy, welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast.
Welcome, Patty.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me on to speak today, because I'm really excited to, first of all, bring this topic to the Toastmasters Convention. Toastmasters has gotten so international now, and I think that this is one area that can really help a lot of people who want to improve their English, international English communication. So I'm really happy and honored to actually to be able to bring my program to this convention this year.
Wonderful. Is this going to work for people with localized accents as well, like maybe a southern accent or a laid-back Maine accent, or is it specifically for the international accents?
Well, this particular workshop would be geared mainly for international speakers. However, a lot of the work I do is for what we call, we have two groups of speakers I'm going to refer to here, the native speakers, those of us for whom English is the first language, and foreign speakers of English, for those of whom English is a second, all the way up to seventh, 12th language. Many international people speak many, many languages. This particular program is going to focus on something that native speakers of English would already know. However, there are articulation and pronunciation programs for native speakers, not so much to get rid of a regional accent, but to make sure that people are articulating. Sometimes from a certain accent, you may drop the ing, for example, at the ending of a word, and that can really lower your value when you're speaking internationally. Also, for native speakers of English, there's a big grammar issue going on. You know, people are saying things like, me and my husband went to the opera. If you're speaking to a well-educated international business person, that's called Tarzan talk, because if you take out my husband, you have me went to the opera. I mean, this is how Tarzan talks. So there are certainly classes for whom we call native speakers, but this particular program is for foreign international business people who, in my experience as an international business strategic communication business coach, found that so many people from around the world, I lived and worked in New York City for years, and so many people with whom I was working were so brilliant, and they knew English probably grammatically better than most of us do, because they had learned so many languages, and they can learn language almost as an equation. You know, the word order in English is subject, verb, object, for example. That's the basic word order of any English sentence. That's why they know not to say, him and I went to the opera. That's why they know, because they know the equation, you could say, of English grammar. But what they don't know is they don't know how to speak in the rhythms of standard North American English. Standard North American English is, in fact, the language spoken in the international world of commerce. It's also the language of international entertainment. More people are watching movies in English that are coming out of the United States than anywhere else in the world. That's the language, that's the English that most people need and want to speak if they're going to be able to conduct themselves well at the international table. So in my experience, there were two things that were always lacking, or that these brilliant young and brilliantly educated young executives from around the world would lose when they got to the negotiation table. The first thing was they didn't know idiomatic language. They'd be going along in their negotiations, and somebody would say, give me a ballpark figure, you know, some kind of guesstimate.
Right.
All of a sudden, our brilliant young guy from France or Spain or Colombia is like, Patty, I don't know how we got to a baseball game. We were negotiating a contract. There was that, and there was the other thing that they were constantly told, could you please slow down? I can't understand your accent. And so what would happen is, to me, the death knell of it all is when you start to try to speak English word by word. because that's what happens when we are told, when we keep telling people to slow down, they start to speak one word at a time.
Or often they speak louder, don't they, Patty?
They do. They'll speak louder, slower, and then what happens to any human being is that their ears just shut down. It's like there's a gate inside the ear that just slams down, and try though we may, we will quit listening. So in all of these years of working, I realized, you know, I had a student, the wife of a high-up executive at L'Oreal, and we were in a little office in New York City, and she had done all the textbooks, and I wanted her now, we started having fun, and so for Christmas, I bought her an anthology of American literature, edited by Joyce Carol Oates, and we began to go through literature. And one day, she was reading out loud, she was reading a story by Richard Wright, the great black American writer, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, when she got into the dialect in the dialogue in the story,
right.
which was all contracted and slangy, the accent was gone. The accent just disappeared. So I made her read it again. And I couldn't believe it. As she got into what is very contracted, you know, what you doing instead of what are you doing. When she got into that, the accent went away. So then I tried it with a Russian. I was trying it with everybody, giving everybody this story to read. And as soon as they got to the dialect, the accent started to disappear. So I started really thinking about this, and I started to research. And sure enough, I began to learn that pretty much all rhythm patterns of any language can be traced back to the indigenous music of that group. And the indigenous music of the United States of America is jazz. It's all contracted. And that's why in North American English, we don't say, I should have gone. We say, I should have gone. We don't say, Bob is on the phone. We say, Bob is on the phone. We speak in sound units. Once I recognized this, I thought, here's the key to good. It's not accents, not the problem. The problem is that people don't understand the rhythm patterns. So I started listening to people like Penelope Cruz or Jackie Chan. And that's two perfect examples of people, when they speak, you know that Penelope Cruz is from Spain or from a Spanish-speaking country. There's no mistaking that. Just as when you hear Jackie Chan speak English, you know he's from an Asian country. Yet you understand every word that they say, and they make buckets of money in U.S. dollars. Hmm. How come? They still keep the culture and the language. They still keep sounds of their mother tongue. But they're, you could almost say they're saying it in the melody or the rhythm of standard North American English. Therefore, we all understand them. So I began to understand that old adage, it's not what you say, but how you say it, really applies to foreign speakers wanting to learn English. And I would never say you can speak like a native speaker in 28 days. I would say be wary of anybody who ever tells you that you're going to sound like a native speaker, because that's pretty much impossible. Unless you really want to focus hard and spend a lot of money learning how to get rid of your mother tongue. I would say again and again, mother tongue is not, it's not the interference of the mother tongue. It's when you try to speak my language in the rhythm patterns of your language. It doesn't work.
All right. That sounds wonderful, Patty. When is your session going to be? Do you know on what day and what time?
My session is going to be Thursday, the 16th at 1 p.m.
All right. Wonderful. Patty, thank you so much for being on with us. We really appreciate it, and I bet you'll have a great showing and a great turnout at this event of yours.
I'm really looking forward to it. So again, thanks to Toastmasters International for even allowing me this opportunity to bring this work there. I think it's just cutting edge and exciting, and I'm really thrilled. So thank you, too.
All right. Take care.
All right. Have a wonderful day. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Beau and I are now joined by Henry Givray. Henry's going to be presenting a session at the conference entitled The Passion of Leadership. Henry is the president and CEO of Smith Buckland. Henry Givray, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, Henry.
Thank you. Yep, it's great to be with you guys. Thanks.
Likewise. So, Henry, my first question for you is a little bit of a smart alecky question, so I hope you forgive me for that. But I was reading your session description, and it says that leadership can't be taught. So I wanted to ask, if leadership can't be taught, what can we hope to learn from your session?
Well, that's the subtlety. So one of the things that I've sort of learned over many, many years of being both a student, a very much passionate student of leadership, And in the positions that I've had over the years, positions of lots of responsibility, you know, responsibility both for particular results and outcomes as well as a bunch of people, what I've discovered and have concluded that the concept of leadership is such that it's not something that you can simply read in a book. There are no simple formulas or set rules or kind of instruction manuals on how to become a true leader. However, there are principles and concepts and guidelines, and those can be learned through sort of a personal active process around self-reflection and self-discovery. So there is a subtlety, but it's an important one because it's up to the individual. What you can teach are the principles. You can teach ideas. You can stimulate self-awareness and self-discovery. But ultimately, whether you're a leader or not is not something for you to determine. For example, what I mean by that is I will never refer to myself as a leader. That is not for me to judge, because leadership is not about the position or the corner office. Leadership really is invited by others, by willing others, based on who you are and what you do. And it's revealed, and this is the key point, leadership is revealed by what you inspire and what you enable. And I'm going to delve much deeper into those four ideas. I call them the four domains around leadership. So it's a little bit of a subtlety, but again, it's around that there aren't any simple formulas or sort of just set rules that says, oh, if I sort of read this book and follow these simple formulas, I'm going to become a leader. No, that's not what that's about.
Right. So I think the point is people that come back from this session are going to be better off.
Well, that's right. And my hope is a couple things. You know, one is I'm going to share some what I call foundational ideas and principles around leadership, just to sort of do a bit of a level set, because I come at leadership from a very different way, mm-hmm. which, again, I will explain. Second, I will share this framework that will help people sort of assess leadership capacity, and capacity is different than ability, which I'll get into another time, and sort of leadership performance. And then I'll also offer some practical ideas that can be put into use on the, you know, every day. But most importantly, my hope from the session is that I will have contributed to the attendees' enthusiasm and commitment for self-discovery and self-reflection around how to become and earn leadership's invitation.
Okay.
Interesting. So, Henry, this framework that you've referred to, I wonder if this is something that you've kind of formulated in your experience as a leader over
I
the
have.
Years, or, you know, if part of it has been imparted to you by other mentors you've, you know, worked with and learned from.
No, it's mine, but mm-hmm. of course it's through my own, you know, the ideas and principles around this framework have been drawn from my own personal journey of learning, growing, discovering, adjusting, over a long period of time through various experiences, both directly with individuals as well as specific, companies and organizations and outcomes.
Right.
But it is a framework. And interesting enough, I've been a passionate student for as long as I can remember. In fact, I can go back to my late 20s when I started thinking about these ideas and the impact of leadership, because I'm in awe of the sort of the profound impact that one person can make, you know, great leaders can make. So over the years, I've thought a lot about it. But it wasn't until 2006 when one of our client organizations asked me to speak on leadership. And so up to that point, I was using my own ideas and thoughts in the context of my job and my organization. You know, as I continued to grow in responsibility over the years, right, I would practice these ideas and thoughts. I put them into action. But in 2006, I was asked to speak. So I said, you know what, I'm going to say yes, because that's going to force me to put all my thoughts and ideas sort of in a cogent way, presentation, that's accessible to others. And since that time, I just simply am asked to continue to speak. So I do a growing number of these presentations, 10 to 12 a year, strictly by word of mouth. And it's the reaction that I get from those that hear me
mm-hmm.
that sort of just, you know, contribute to my own commitment to continue to do it. And by the way, it's not just speaking. I've written, I published a few articles in Business Week, even though I just continue to write even unpublished articles. I've been cited in a number of books in terms of my ideas and thoughts. So it's a labor of love. It's a real passion around the topic. But frankly, it's also about giving back.
All right. Well, that sounds good.
To the extent that I'm invited to do so.
Right. Well, we're not going to let you off the hook without giving our listeners a good tidbit, something that they could take away with them now within the next 2 minutes. What can you tell them about leadership in the next 2 minutes or so?
Yeah, so let me share this point, which ties to the whole idea of leadership can't be done. But let me leave them with this, that the core essence of leadership is profoundly uncomplicated, involving three critical actions. The first is imagining something better about the future, visualizing something better. It could be as simple as an improvement in a process, or it could be as huge as transforming a company to ensure its long-term success. The second action, however, is that those who aspire to be leaders may have the vision of the future, but they know they can't get there alone. So they get others to join in the journey. And then third, they get there. So great leaders are also great managers. And that's something that you don't hear very often. There's a lot of people who would say, well, you know, I'm not a manager, I'm a leader because I'm a visionary. Well, no, you're a visionary. You only do one of the three critical actions well. So while leadership, sort of the essence of leadership, is profoundly uncomplicated, as I said earlier, however, there's a rub because there aren't any simple formulas on how to be a true leader.
Right.
Great. Henry, this sounds like fascinating content. And when are you going to be presenting your session?
So I am on Thursday, August 16th, from 11:30 to 12:30.
Great.
All right.
We'll look forward to it. Thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And joining us on the show now is Lars Zoetman, all the way from Brussels, Belgium. Lars is an entrepreneur, a speaker, trainer, and international consultant in the topics of leadership and communication. Lars is going to be presenting a session at the International Conference entitled The Humor Code, 9 Laws of Humor for Your Presentation Success. Lars Zoetman, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome,
Lars. Thank you very much. Great to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you.
Lars, the humor code. I did not realize humor has a code. Tell us what that is about.
Well, the humor code, you know, whenever I think about speaking or presentations, I use what I call the code. The code stands for four letters, actually. C-O-D-E, content, organization, delivery, and effect. And what I will be sharing in the session in Orlando are tips, laws, and humor in these different four different areas here. So we'll look at content. How can we create humor? How can we deliver humor? How can we even add some special effect humor? How can we bring that into speech? So that's the code of humor then.
Right. So not only do we have a code, we also have laws, 9 of them. Are these breakable laws?
They are definitely breakable laws. I mean, they are things that work for me. I started out, when I started looking into speeches as part of my professional speaking career and into humor, I really realized, well, humor is something that I have to bring into my speech. And I felt like, okay, how do I do that? How do I create this humor? And I started analyzing, and I really looked at things, what does work, what does not work, and I created for me these 9 things. For me, these laws or these tips work, but absolutely, they can also work on the reverse. You can break them, yeah.
Okay, just to prove your stuff works, say something funny.
No, just kidding. Tell us a joke, funny man.
All right. You know, it's always one of the laws of humor, not one of them that I will be sharing. One of the laws of humor is, of course, also the audience itself and having a big room in front of you that is very dense. So audio humor or podcast humor is something special. But, I mean, I can share one situation that I recently had. You know, I talk a lot about virtual environments. Mm-hmm. You know, in my professional leadership area. So I talk about, okay, how can you lead such a virtual environment? And recently I was... I was with a colleague, and we were talking about webinars, you know these things where you sit in front of a PC, in front of a laptop, and listen to a speaker.
Sure.
And most of the people hate them. So we were talking about this, and this colleague of mine said, well, webinars are fantastic. I love them. I was like, whoa, that was that is interesting. Why do you like them? You're the first one to say that. And he was like, well, you know, I love them because I can get my job done during them.
Right.
That is, and you know, like, when you see that, that is one example, basically, that we very often use also in the virtual field, basically, here for humans. You really see that some of the laws that play into this are a painful situation, basically, that people will recognize and that they will know.
Right.
And there, yeah.
Yeah, because we've all experienced those painful situations before.
Yeah.
So, Lars, talk to us a little bit about the format of your session. Is this going to be highly interactive, or is it going to be more of a lecture format? What do you have in store for attendees?
It's a combination. It's going to be pretty interactive, very interactive. I will be exploring with the audience together, like, situations of humor. So we will show some humorous elements, also from other speeches. I will present some things that work for me, and then I will be in pretty interactive format, like discuss with the audience why was that then funny, what did work, what didn't work maybe, and how can you incorporate this then always into your speeches. So we were doing some exercise with it, and everybody will walk away with at least one idea, or a very concrete idea of a humorous situation that they can build into their speeches.
Right.
So we'll talk about a lot of things. We'll talk about dishwashing, you know, and many, many different fields, and people will explore it for themselves, like, what are the humorous moments there?
Right. See, I think when I think about people who are funny, I think that they have this unique ability to view the world in a certain way, and I often think, I wish I had that gift. But with your description of the art and science of humor, it sounds like there are things we can learn to think or view the world that way.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you pointed out rightly, like, this different world, we look at things from a different way. And this is a fundamental, and we'll talk about this also, it's a fundamental law as well of humor, looking at situations and taking them into a different context, or bringing something, you know, bring some new elements in there. That is a fundamental law, and we'll work on this. I mean, there are some techniques that you can incorporate into your speeches, and especially into speech crafting, that just force you to bring in a different view. Just one example for it. Whenever you have any situation that you describe in a speech, whatever you talk about, if you want to talk about a business topic or something like this, one thing that you can incorporate from creativity theory, just take it, open a book, like while you're writing that speech, and just point a finger to any noun that comes into that book. So whatever it is, so water or fish or something like that, and then try to find a combination between the situation that you're talking about and this new word that came up, whatever it is, fish or house or whatever it is. And that helps you sharpen the thinking of, okay, I have to look at it from a different view. And that helps us create all the humorous moments and situations.
Hmm. Sounds like some good stuff, Lars. So when exactly is your session going to be? What time and day?
It's on Friday, August 17th, and it's in the afternoon, 4:30 p.m.
Wonderful. Lars, thank you so much for being with us. It sounds great, and I encourage our listeners to check it out. Thank you very much for being with us.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it. All right.
Thanks, Lars. And joining us now from Brisbane, Queensland, Australia, is Advanced Toastmaster Jock Elliott. Jock is a trainer, a speechwriter, and speech coach. And, oh, by the way, he is the reigning world champion of public speaking. Mr. Jock Elliott, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you.
Great to have you with us today, Jock. Now, Jock, I understand your session at the International Convention is entitled The Journey, or How to Win the World Championship of Public Speaking in 35 Years or Less.
That's correct.
Love that title. How did you ever come up with it?
It just seemed like a good idea. It has been a journey. People started calling that immediately, and it wasn't an overnight phenomenon. So I took a lot of diversions and made mistakes and got things right and got things wrong, and it's just a taking people through the things that I discovered, good, bad, and indifferent, and for which all of which have had a part to play in where I am today and who I am today, and which may be of interest or indeed value to the listeners.
I'm sure that it will be. And Jacques, would you say that your session is geared towards those who want to speak competitively in Toastmasters or anywhere, or are you not necessarily targeting it just towards those who want to compete?
No, it's directed to anybody. I just think that competition is the best learning ground, because it really puts you under the pressure. We can get very comfortable in Toastmasters, but the lessons I've learned have application to the whole of our speaking or communications activities. And whilst a lot of it is based on competition experience, the lessons are general and could be applied across the board, because not everyone wants to compete.
Without giving away all of your thunder for the presentation, could you maybe share with us a tidbit of something that did not work that you learned from and knew what to do better next time as a result of?
I did a very good speech, about the great blue whale, and it worked spectacularly well in terms of reducing everyone to tears, but it left people in tears, and that's not a good place to leave people, except perhaps at a funeral. you've got to, it doesn't matter how far down you take your audience, you've got to bring them back. So the depths of any, the depths and the highs of any presentation require balance. They require balance not only so that people can recover from them, but so the speaker can deliver them effectively, and so that the highs and the depths are higher and deeper by the contrast, because the speech of unrelieved gloom will just be that, and when you get to the really bad bits, it's just lost in the darkness. I enjoyed exploring where I can take people without manipulating, but learning how to make them laugh, how to make them cry, how to do the same thing in the same speech. But it was an important lesson that I have to bring people back.
Right. Yeah, that's you can definitely touch some deep emotions there. But I can see that based on having attended many speech contests, how there needs to be some sort of positive note or something left that you can hang on to other than tears.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There's got to be a take home, which right. is valuable.
Right. Great. Well, certainly anytime folks have the opportunity to learn from a world champion or hear perspective from a world champion, that is certainly an opportunity worth taking. And with you, Jacques, having attended the speech contest myself last year, you are certainly no exception.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with us about your session as we look towards Florida this August?
It's been a long journey. It's not over yet. I now discover there are more things I want to say that are now denied to me in competition, so I'll just have to work up other ways of presenting them. But it's been a relief. It's been an extraordinary experience over the years and a lot of pleasure, but it does take its toll on your pocket and on your family and all the rest of it. But for all that, if we did nothing that didn't take a toll, then we wouldn't be much, would we?
Right. Right. That's a good point. Well, congratulations to you on your tremendous win last summer. Enjoy the time coming up here at convention as you enjoy the last few moments as the reigning world champion. And we will look forward to seeing you there, Jacques.
Thank you very much indeed, Ron.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.